From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. A national expert in recalls of elected officials says the legal fight over the proposed recall of Governor Mike Dunleavy highlights how unusual Alaska's law on the issue is. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Joshua Spivak has been following recalls of politicians for more than 20 years. He's based at Wagner College in New York City and blogs about recalls, writes legal papers about recalls, is quoted in news stories on recalls. And he says there's something different about what's happening in Alaska.
Alaska has perhaps the most unique recall law in the country.
Most states that have recalls allow them for any reason. It's up to voters to decide. Spivak says Alaska is one of 8 states that defines in law the grounds for recalls. In these states, people proposing recalls must give a reason that complies with these grounds. But Alaska is unique among these states in that it requires recall organizers to gather many signatures before state officials can certify a recall application. Once that happens, an even larger signature gathering effort must happen to force a recall election. Spivak says that's not the only difference.
That itself is odd. But what makes Alaska doubly strange is that there was a change in the law in some ways by a few Supreme Court decisions.
For example, in a case in 1984, the court held that a recall law should be liberally constructed so that the people are permitted to vote and express their will. Spivak spells out why this matters. Across the country, the vast majority of recalls have happened in states that allow recalls for any reason, what Spivak calls political recall states. And he says Alaska courts have interpreted its recall law to be more like those states than states that require organizers to give a reason that matches state law.
In fact, the state has had a number of recalls over the years on the local level, not on the state level, and those have occurred because the Supreme Court has adopted a much more liberal approach to the recall, one that makes it almost a political recall state.
He means liberal in the sense of not strict. He doesn't mean liberal politically. Fast forward to this week, when Division of Elections Director Gail Fanoumiai rejected the group Recall Dunleavy's application. The group sued. Spivak says that if the case gets to the Supreme Court and it follows the principles the court applied in 1984, it would likely go well for the recall group.
But that's a different Supreme Court, and Supreme Courts are made up very much of whoever is serving on the court itself. So it's a real question of what will happen.
Spivak notes that Fanoumiai drew on advice from Attorney General Kevin Clarkson, and Clarkson says the law should be interpreted strictly. Clarkson says the recall application failed to show Dunleavy committed neglect of duty, and that mere procedural or technical failures are not enough to meet the grounds for recall. So Spivak says the court will have to choose between the two approaches, the liberal approach it took in the past or the strict approach Clarkson is urging. Recall Dunleavy is asking the courts to hold hearings on the case on a sped-up schedule with the goal of having the recall election in the spring. The case has been assigned to Anchorage Superior Court Judge Una Gondbeer. And as the case unfolds, Spivak will be keeping an eye on it. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
A judge is considering whether to dismiss a lawsuit by a civil liberties group alleging Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of nearly $335,000 from the state court system budget was unconstitutional and retaliatory. Attorneys for the state contend the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska is asking the court to do what it complains Dunleavy did and interfere with a co-equal branch of government. In arguments Tuesday in Anchorage, Assistant Attorney General Jessica Leah said the case is political. She also questioned whether the plaintiffs had standing to bring it. Dunleavy cut from the court budget an amount the administration said was commensurate to state funding for abortions following an Alaska Supreme Court decision striking down a law and regulations seeking to define what constitutes medically necessary abortions for Medicaid funding. As the Alaska Marine Highway System faces a reduced budget and limited sailings, the municipality of Skagway is looking at ways to maintain ferry service for Upper Lynn Canal. Last week, the McDowell Group completed a study for the city that examines the possibilities for developing a locally controlled ferry system. KHNS's Henry Leisha has more.
The McDowell Group's latest study for Skagway explores management options and discusses the challenges and opportunities for a Northern Lynn Canal ferry service. Jim Calvin was the project manager for the study. He says if Skagway wanted to pursue an independent ferry service, it should be operated by a port authority.
It's a public corporation that would be governed by a board of directors that include representatives of whatever stakeholder communities are part of the organization. It operates independently financially and operationally from the local government or governments that create it.
Calvin says the Port Authority model makes the system accountable to the public and opens the door for state and federal subsidies. He says it is not realistic to provide an adequate level of service for the Upper Lynn Canal without public funding, and a for-profit service wouldn't have access to that support. Calvin points to the Inter-Island Ferry Authority as an example of the kind of system that could work for the Upper Lynn Canal. The IFA is guided by a board with representatives from each of the communities it serves.
You know, how the communities, the relationship between the communities that create the authority and how the authority operates, I think it serves as a good model in that respect. It serves a good model in understanding access to federal funding and perhaps state funding.
The study describes the process to establish a ferry service managed by a local port authority. First, municipalities served by the ferry would need to pass ordinances and receive voter approval. Then the state would need to pass a law approving it. Finally, the port authority would need to establish a board of directors and hire an executive director to manage the system. While the study focuses on governance and management of a local ferry authority, there are numerous other questions about how to create a ferry service. For example, where would they get the ships?
There isn't the money available to construct new vessels, so the question has become where might those vessels come from, and if there were to be a ferry authority developed in Lynn Canal, where might the authority secure access ownership or control of the vessels they need to provide that service.
The study suggests that a local ferry authority might consider acquiring the Alaska-class ferries, two vessels that were built by the Alaska Marine Highway System to serve Haines, Skagway, and Juneau. Now, it's up to the municipality to decide if this is an idea worth pursuing. In Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
In other ferry news, the state's largest business group is throwing its weight behind the beleaguered Alaska Marine Highway System. Members of the Alaska Chamber of Commerce voted to say the state ferries are critical to the state's economy. Cordova Chamber of Commerce Director Kathy Rentfeldt penned a formal resolution in response to funding cuts dropping Prince William Sound communities from the winter schedule.
What we're feeling right now is what a whole lot more Alaskans will feel like very soon, I think, if nothing was done.
About a dozen city chambers co-sponsored the resolution, and nearly all of the chamber's members voted for it. State Chamber Director Katie Capozzi says that means she will give testimony or write letters in support of the system as issues arise. Haines Chamber of Commerce Director Tracy Harmon says it's important that the state's business community is beginning to take notice of what's happening in coastal Alaska.
There's only so much that we can do with advocacy and submitting letters of support. I think when you're part of a larger body, a larger voice, that's a statewide voice, it's now I feel protected under the strong arm of the chamber, the state chamber's advocacy.
Repairs to the ferry Leconte are estimated to cost $2.8 million more than budgeted. The state has pulled it out of service, affecting nearly 1,000 passengers with more than 500 vehicles. There's no alternative for passengers on routes serving Angoon, Tenneke, Pelican, and Gustavus, which are cut off for the foreseeable future. More than 680 passengers have been refunded. A government agency is recommending that all 50 states enact laws requiring bicyclists to wear helmets to stem an increase in bicycle deaths on U.S. roadways. The recommendation was among several issued by the National Transportation Safety Board after a hearing yesterday on bicycle safety. The agency says 857 bicyclists died in crashes with motor vehicles in the U.S. last year, a 6.3% increase over 2017. Bicycle deaths rose even though total road deaths fell. The NTSB also found that improved road designs to separate bicycle and vehicle traffic and making cyclists more visible through clothing, lights, and technology would reduce the number of cyclist deaths. NTSB Chairman Robert Sumwalt says if changes aren't made, more cyclists will die. At the state level, Alaska does not have any bicycle helmet laws. However, Anchorage does for youths under 16. The last Alaska State Trooper drug dog trained to detect marijuana is set to retire soon. After the legalization of recreational marijuana, it's made the veterans' canine noses obsolete. That's part of the reason the troopers are busy training more police dogs to work in communities throughout the state. The dogs in the troopers' current academy are training to detect heroin, methamphetamine, and cocaine. Canine instructor Sergeant Brian Zeisel says retraining older dogs not to signal when they smell marijuana is very difficult. The problem, Zeisel says, is that the legalization of marijuana meant the older dogs would still indicate the presence of drugs, even if they were only presented with legal marijuana.
They weren't the hinge pin for the probable cause anymore, because if marijuana was potentially involved, obviously the dog would indicate on that and it wouldn't be effective for a search warrant.
The updated training has quickly shown to be effective, though a canine named Lennox helped nab more than a pound of meth and 2 ounces of heroin recently, just a few days after graduating from drug detection school. It was the first deployment for Lennox, named after Trooper Gabriel Lennox Rich, who was killed in the line of duty. And here in Juneau, Petro Marine employees were deploying bright yellow boom around their dock in Gatineau Channel today. Boom is basically a floating guardrail used to contain oil spills. Plant manager Jeff Irvin says it's just a drill ahead of an upcoming Coast Guard evaluation. They'll have another spill response drill next Tuesday.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, like basketball practice, the more you do it, the better you get, right, if you ever have an incident.
He said the Coast Guard and State Department of Environmental Conservation were notified. He expected to be drilling most of the day. Restructuring and next year's budget are primary items before University of Alaska Regents for meetings in Fairbanks on Thursday and Friday. A UA release says Regents will gather for a facilitated workshop tomorrow to find, quote, common ground on university structural issues, including leadership roles and responsibilities, unquote. UA President Jim Johnson, system chancellors, governance leaders, and invited experts will join Regents for the all-day session. On Friday, Regents will review and approve a proposed $832 million spending plan, which includes a $277 million state funding request for next year. And finally, anyone with unpaid parking fines at the University of Alaska Anchorage campus has the option to reduce or cover the cost of their tickets with peanut butter and jelly. KTUU reported the university would take donations for their annual payment tradition until November 8th to help combat student hunger. Officials say the food goes to students in need. An individual can donate up to 5 60-ounce jars for a $60 credit. Officials say any unopened commercially produced nut butter, almond, cashew, peanut, or any flavored jam, jelly, marmalade, or preserves will be accepted. National Weather Service forecast for the borough and Northern Admiralty Island. Tonight, rain, lows in the mid-30s. Thursday, rain, highs in the mid-40s. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, November 6th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.